Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now. Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah, and we are having a short emergency episode with Melanie Ward, the CEO of MAP. That's Medical Aid for Palestinians. Melanie has just been in Gaza, and she messaged me and said, look, I just really need to update you about the situation there. Melanie, thank you so much for joining us. Could you give us an update, please?
Sure. Yeah, it's good to be with you. As a guilty feminist listener myself, it's nice to have the chance to tell everybody about what I saw and heard and witnessed in Gaza last week. So I was in Gaza for a few days last week, and I have to say the scale of the humanitarian disaster on the ground is utterly horrifying. And as somebody who has followed the detail of what's happening in Gaza every day for the last 6 months, who knows all of the statistics about what's being done to people, 110,000 people killed and injured so far, famine conditions. 110,000 people killed and injured. Famine conditions setting in the north, more than a million people crowding into the city of Rafah. You know, I talk to my staff on the ground there every day, but seeing it for myself, it's everything I expected and a million times worse all at the same time.
Oh God.
So I can tell you a bit about what happened, you know, what do you see on the ground? What is it like? I arrived through Rafah Crossing, which is in the south of Gaza. We traveled through the Sinai Peninsula in Egypt to get there. And honestly, as I say, there are now more than a million people crowded into Rafah, which is not a big city in Gaza. But what's happened is, people have, they're literally fleeing the Israeli military. So they are as close to the sea as they can get. Some people are literally on the beach because they're trapped between the sea on one hand, on the west, and then on the east, the Israeli military, a hostile military that is obviously on trial at the world's highest court for the potential genocide of the population there. So people have literally squeezed themselves into the west of the territory. And everywhere you go, there are tens of thousands of tents. Some of them are proper tents, but most of them are flimsy makeshift shelters that people have made, finding pieces of plastic, anything they can, and stretched it over wood to try to make shelters. And the tents are everywhere, as far as you can see. They're on all of the pavements. They're on the central reservations in the roads. They are everywhere. There was a school or a clinic. People are like spilling out of it because they're trying to find somewhere they think might be safer. So all of those places, they're absolutely crowded in. And you smell the sewage. There are lakes of raw human waste everywhere you go in Gaza. You can't escape the smell. They are right beside the places where people are living. They're beside where children are. You see lots of children sitting by the roadside with empty plates and saucepans, literally empty plates and saucepans. The kids don't have shoes. This wasn't the case in Gaza. People had clothes. People are selling firewood. It's very striking. You see more people selling firewood than you do selling food. And that's because like people had houses and kitchens and cookers and ovens, and now they are living outside under a piece of plastic sheeting, cooking on an open fire. So there's lots of people selling wood. And we saw there's only three ATMs functioning now in the whole of Gaza. And one of them is in Rafa. And so I drove past it twice, and there are people, men, you know, hundreds of them crowded round, kind of climbing over each other to try to get to the ATM to get some cash. And then the other thing is what you hear. It's an active war zone. And so you hear, like, you woke up to the sound of the Israeli Navy firing at you from the sea. So you hear the battleships firing. You hear shelling, because you can hear the missile be fired and then when it lands. You hear the warplanes overhead, the fighter jets dropping bombs, and you see the smoke. And you hear the drones. Actually, you hear the drones overhead before you even get into Gaza. Some of those are armed, so that's horrible and alarming. So it's an absolutely unmitigated human disaster.
What is the situation with people actually starving? How can we help get food in? Because that seems even more than sanitation or anything so important, because we've seen some horrible images of children with extreme malnutrition, like you'd see in a famine zone, but there doesn't seem to be any reason for it, because there is ability to get food in, but it's being blocked. What can we do to help get food in? Are there any safe routes? Are there any groups that are being allowed to get food in now?
So you're absolutely right. It's not an accident that people don't have food. This is on purpose, horrifically. People are being starved on purpose, and we're now in famine conditions in the north of Gaza. And actually, in the north, children are being starved at the fastest rate the world has ever seen. That's how bad the data is. The nutritional decline in the population, to use the technical jargon, is the fastest the world has ever seen. So kids are being starved at the fastest rate we've ever seen. And that's because the Israeli military won't allow enough food supplies in. So as you approach Gaza, I mean, we literally drove past queues of hundreds of trucks of aid that are just waiting, not being allowed in. We at Medical Aid for Palestinians, we've got 8 trucks actually of medical supplies currently in the queue, another 15 about to join. And it's simply a case of political will, because there are only 2 land crossings that they're letting trucks through at the moment in the south. There are none into the north, although they say they're going to open one, we'll see. And because the north is the hardest place to get to, that's because there's an Israeli checkpoint that runs east to west at a place called Wadi Gaza, which is about a third of the way down. And it's really dangerous to cross that checkpoint. So if you're in a humanitarian convoy, the majority of them are denied. The Israelis don't give permission for the aid to cross from the south of Gaza to the north. But also on Tuesday, while I was there, a UNICEF vehicle, which obviously had aid workers in it, who specialise in treating child malnutrition, was shot at by Israeli soldiers. And they were in an armoured vehicle, so they're alive, but this is how dangerous it is. So, like, the only solution to any of this is political will. That's the only thing that's going to put pressure on Israel to allow enough food in.
What do you think we can do to create that political will?
I think that you and listeners can contact your MPs. Like, political pressure is the only thing that's going to make a difference here. And we've got a campaign action on the MAP website. If people want to go there, www.map.org.uk. Even better, write an email to your MP or make an appointment to go and see them at their surgery. Tell them how outraged you are, how upset you are. There's a general election coming up, so politicians care about this. And, you know, all of the public polling already shows that people in this country actually are far ahead of the politicians in understanding that what they're seeing is wrong, and that the deliberate starvation and bombardment of a population for more than 6 months, the destruction of the healthcare system, people know that that's wrong. The politicians, most of them aren't quite got there yet. So any pressure, anyone can do, any emails that can be sent, phone calls to offices, this does all help.
Does MAP have doctors in there at the moment, but they don't have enough equipment, they don't have enough supplies, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So I visited one of the hospitals, Al-Aqsa Hospital in Deir al-Bala, where we had MAP doctors, including British doctors, and there's not enough equipment because, as I mentioned, the situation with aid supplies, they just won't let enough in. To give you an idea of it, before this awful war, around 500 trucks of supplies of different kinds would go into Gaza every day. Since this began, There's fewer than less than a quarter of that amount that has got in overall. And in a war, you need a lot more. So that's how much, you know, we're being deprived of what is needed. So in the hospital I went to, that hospital usually has 170 beds. There were 700 patients in it, so it's more than four times capacity. All of the local doctors, Palestinian doctors, are exhausted. Been working through this war for the last 6 months. A lot of the nurses have been displaced, and the doctors themselves, so they've all fled south to try to seek safety in Rafah for now. So they're completely overwhelmed, they're exhausted, there's not enough supplies. The situation in the hospital, honestly, I've never seen anything like it. Every piece of space, as soon as you go into the hospital grounds, is full of displaced people in tents because they think hospitals might be safer than everywhere else, even though there were 36 hospitals in Gaza, there is now only 10 that are even partially functioning. When you go in, the first thing I saw was a man with both legs amputated. This is very common, unfortunately.
Oh God.
Then I saw somebody with an open wound. This was in the hospital reception area, right? With flies in the wound, in the waiting areas. Everywhere is full of patients. Some of them are in bed, some of them are on the floors. You see that there's a drone overhead. There was an Israeli drone over us the whole time, and some of the drones are armed. So it's very, they make a terrible noise, but also it's very alarming because you don't know what they're going to do 1 minute to the next. And
are you very frightened when you're out there all the time for your own life?
I mean, you kind of, to some extent, I think, firstly, I'm only there for a short amount of time, and I was with my staff, MAP staff, who are all Palestinian, and they live this every day. And to some extent, of course, it's nerve-wracking to be there. It's not a safe place. There's nowhere that's safe to go. But you're just very aware that you don't really have any control over any of these things. If a plane, I've been in Gaza before when there was airstrikes before this war, and you very quickly realise there's not very much you can do about it. So you have to get on with it, and trust that our local staff know the situation well, will do whatever they can to try and keep us all safe. But as we can see, you know, so many Palestinians killed and injured, it's not really possible to stay safe. So the hospital was just utterly horrifying. There's not enough medical supplies. The doctors are all exhausted. And I went into a children's ward, a bay that would usually have three kids in it, had eight kids in their carer. To give you an example, there was a little girl. She had an arm injury from an airstrike. She was screaming in pain. She was waiting for surgery. It was absolutely soul-destroying and completely unnecessary for her to be, and so many kids and civilians to be suffering. There are some painkillers, but not enough, because not enough supplies are getting through. So things tend to run out really quickly. And the other thing was also that because Israel hasn't switched the water back on yet, so sometimes in the wards, there's no running water. So trying to keep sterile is very difficult.
Can I ask, if we donate to MAP, you are getting supplies in just slowly and when you're allowed. And this is going to go on for a long time. And when more things are allowed in, you're going to need a big backlog of equipment, of supplies, of presumably airfares for doctors to get out there when it's safer and when more people are allowed in. So donations coming in steadily to MAP are very welcome, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So we are able to spend some money, and we're also busy planning for one day, inshallah, when there's a ceasefire. To give you a sense of what we've been able to do so far, we've been able to send more than $7 million worth of medical supplies to Gaza, which have reached hospitals. In the north of Gaza, we have an amazing team there, and the north is the most difficult place, as I said earlier. We have a team of staff there. We've managed to reach more than 60,000 displaced people in 31 shelters with hygiene supplies, dignity kits, which are particularly important for women. So we have, sanitary pads, clean underwear, wipes, lots of things like that to try and stay clean. Imagine living in a displaced shelter with, you know, thousands of strangers. Warm clothes. Our medical teams, we have our fifth emergency medical team is the one that I visited. We have a new one going on Monday. We have 12 different medical points set up across the middle and the south of Gaza, and this is just a start. So I visited one because there are no, because there's very few primary healthcare centres still functioning, fewer than 25%. We've set up medical points in the middle of the, they're not even camps, but in the middle of the areas where displaced people are, providing primary health care. And then also, it's one of the only places where women can get postnatal and antenatal care as well, and other kinds of sexual and reproductive health services. And actually, the one I visited was one by one of our partners, which is an amazing organization we've worked with in Gaza for many years, run by some absolutely amazing women, honestly, amazing Palestinian feminists, running this big shelter. And before, they used to run a women's health center, which I visited in calmer times. Anyway, they were amazing. So it's supporting those women to help others to survive. And we've also got a water and sanitation expert there just now. We're scaling up our malnutrition program. And as I say, we've got other trucks of items in the queue to get there. So some aid can get in, but not enough. And we need to plan for a massive scale up when that becomes possible.
All right. So we need to keep giving to MAP as and when we can, and also to contact our MP and say, look, please at least let aid in. Like, if you're bombing people and you're turning their water off, and you're, please just at least let foreign aid in. But, you know, at some point, clearly this has to end, and they will. And at that point, we're going to need so much backlog of aid. So it's, the time to give is steady and often now. What you can. Thank you so much, Melanie. Is there anything else you came to say that you didn't get to say?
I think just to say that I think there's so much racism that's inherent in the way that people, politicians, the world treats Palestinians. And I think if this were anywhere else in the world where you had 2 million people crammed into a tiny space, being constantly bombed, starved, the healthcare system systematically dismantled, the fabric of life being destroyed, because it's not just healthcare, it's schools, universities, mosques. You had aid being systematically denied entry, and you had aid workers being killed, predominantly, by the way, Palestinian aid workers, of whom more than 200 have been killed. If it was anywhere else in the world, surely there'd be an outcry. And our government and Western governments would be, because this is, most of this is, you know, against international law, they would be decrying it. They'd be taking action to stop it. And instead, it's allowed to continue. So this is why the actions that listeners can take are so important.
Yeah, I found listening to you very emotional and heartbreaking. And also, you know, I feel your trauma at seeing, witnessing firsthand the trauma of those who are completely just... out of control of this situation, small children who have just lost both parents, both legs, have nothing to eat, have no painkillers. It just seems so horrific. And especially, like, yeah, not especially, I mean, it's all horrifying, but the famine part of it's so unnecessary, to not allow food and water in at this point and to not allow painkillers in. It just seems, or proper operating equipment, it just seems so horrendous. So we do need to act as an international community.
I also saw some of the aid items that had been rejected. You know, the Israelis do a, quote, security check before they let items in, which is one of the reasons why they say it is so slow. And some of the items that had been rejected included an anaesthetic machine, an X-ray machine. I saw bleach that had been rejected, a big box of crutches that had been rejected, cooking items, even sleeping bags that had been rejected because they were green or they had a camouflage pattern on them, because apparently this is a military colour. And I don't know what kind of system denies displaced people sleeping bags and crutches. So it's devastating.
Yeah, it seems absolutely extraordinary. I'm devastated to hear all this, and it's a really traumatic situation. And for those who are going through it every day with no choice and no way of leaving, it's just unimaginable horrors. So it feels very, very much like there is not much to do once you've contacted your MP, but keep sharing, share with friends and family, A lot of stuff's shadow banned now on Instagram. We were sharing stuff and then basically no one can see anything we post anymore, or very, very, very few people can see very little that we post. Unless we pay to boost like a post about a show, most people can't see anything we post anymore, or very little that we post, I think. So it's difficult to know what it is to do. And I keep thinking they've got to stop soon and they've got to let aid in. And at that point, we really have to be ready to go. So I would hope to go out myself, you know, at that time and do what little I can. And Melanie, thank you so much. You know, I know MAP is not a political organization. It's an organization of doctors who just want to get out there and who want to help people who have had limbs blown off, or are having a baby, or, you know, dying and need to die with some dignity. So we really appreciate what you're doing and we wish to support you in any way we can. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for going out and telling us your firsthand experiences. We're so sorry to hear about all of this, but we really appreciate you communicating it.
Thank you so much to you, Deborah, for consistently caring about this story and for doing everything that you are and continue to do to support MAP. We truly appreciate it. To you and to everyone who works with you and to all of your listeners, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Melanie. You can go to map.org.uk if you'd like to know more, read more, donate. Wherever you are in the world, you can write to your MP or representative, wherever you are. Let them know that you think this humanitarian disaster is unnecessary and pressure needs to be brought to bear that aid and doctors can get in. In the meantime, please go to map.org.uk and you can find MAP on socials as well. Give them a follow, read about them. If you've got any money to spare, or you can give a direct debit, even if it's small. It means the world. And then at least you feel you're doing something. If you feel very disempowered by this and you feel very desperate and you think, well, there's nothing I can do, MAP is purely about doctors getting to patients. That's all it's about. It's not political in any way, and it can't be. If they're political, they wouldn't be able to get in. So please go on and donate. If you can't afford to donate, do you know someone who could? Could you send them a link via WhatsApp or tell them with your face? Thank you so much, Melanie Ward, CEO of MAP.
Thank you so much.